welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop, and we will start today with the North London Derby. Tottenham Hotspur taking on Arsenal, and Arsenal would pick up a crucial 3 points in this fixture against their City rivals. The Gunners cruise into a 3-0 half-time lead with an own goal from Højbjerg, one from Bukayo Saka, and another from Kai Havertz. But there was also a big moment before Arsenal's second goal, where Spurs had two penalty claims denied. In the second half, it wasn't such smooth sailing for Arteta's men, as Christian Romero punished a David Raya mistake. Son Heung-min also scored from the spot, but Arsenal held on for the win and top spot in the table, having played one game more than City, but being 1 point ahead of them as well. Let's welcome in Don Hutchison to talk more about the game. So that was a nervy finish, Don.
It was. They shouldn't have made it nervy, because Bukayo Saka had a chance just before half-time that was cleared off the line from Vicario. Great save to make it four. But all of a sudden, the game turned very chaotic towards the end. I thought Arsenal were in full control. I think in the end, when you analyse the performance of both teams, I think the scoreline flattered Tottenham. Arsenal should have been out of sight, but it was very, very nervy towards the end of the game. I mean, what I would say about Ange Postecoglou is sometimes this season, it feels as though his team have been a little bit naive. I go back to the Chelsea game. Newcastle last week, a couple of weeks ago, when the analysis was done on how his teams play with Pedro Porro being inverted and a doggy, it was Ben Davies today. They're very predictable. Same sort of scenario today. And what I would say, when you're analysing how Arsenal attack set plays, corners, Ben White always stands on the goalkeeper. He always tries to put him off. Shaka will know, and it's normally on the goalkeeper to have the conversation with the coaching staff. What do you want in that scenario? Well, I think, and Shaka might disagree, you want someone that's going to protect the goalkeeper and allow him a little bit of space to try and come out and attack the ball. Funny enough, they did that at halftime when they brought Pap Sarr on. He was the player that got in front of Vicario and stopped Ben White from making any challenges. So I thought from Tottenham's point of view, the game was chaotic, but the tactics from the coach and the manager was a little bit naive. That's work that should be done weeks ago.
You were annoyed at the Spurs defence for not providing...
Absolutely, because we've seen this before. We saw it against Manchester City with Diaz. And now what Ben White does cleverly here, despite trying to undo his gloves, is he stands behind the goalkeeper. And so Vicario can't focus on him. And then just at the last moment, he comes around, he takes position, Vicario can't advance. That... Spurs should know so much better than this. Again, just given their own experiences not so long ago, as I just mentioned, and given Arsenal's strength from set pieces, again, I am so surprised, if not disappointed, at Spurs' own naivety around everything, because those ultimately were set pieces, were their undoing.
And while I agree with Don and you that there should be a defender there or a defending player that is protecting Vicario, I also have to say, if you're the goalkeeper, and I don't want to speak out of term here, Shaggy, you're the goalkeeper, right? You're the goalkeeper. Push the guy out of the way. Stop playing just like patty cakes with Ben White. Get him out of the way. You have the power to do that. And in fact, most of the time, once you try to fight through that challenge, you're going to be given a foul in favor of the goalkeeper. If you try to fight through the challenge and somehow you're impeded by that attacking player, in this case Ben White, usually you're given a foul as well. I don't understand why Vicario just kind of takes a push back and says, oh, yeah, push me, get on the way. Hold on. You are the one that has the responsibility now to get him out of the way.
Now, here's the thing with that. As a goalkeeper, from the time you use your arms to move somebody out of the way, you're, especially given how the game has gone, you're more liable to get a call against you. So I'm a little bit more reluctant as a goalkeeper to be using my hands, two hands on Ben White in this case, to move him out of the way or whatever the case may be. You put another defender there, and they are going shoulder to shoulder. And as long as he's not wrestling with Ben White or whoever else it may be, if they're going shoulder to shoulder and it's just about each player's physicality, you're not going to get that, or you're more likely to, the defender's more likely to get the call. Which is why, again, to Don's point, put a defender there. Let him do that dirty work. And again, if there's no defender there, Ben White just comes around the last minute. As a goalkeeper, I can't be looking behind me to see what Ben White is doing. I have to be looking at the ball when that service is coming. Ben White times his run to perfection, and all of a sudden, I'm I'm struggling.
Let's get to those first half penalty claims, particularly Trossard's clip on Kulusevski. Don, how did you see it?
Not for me. Commentating on the game in real time, we had the VAR in our ears, and I think it was a natural coming together. I think Ali's got a point. If you're Kulusevski, you make more of it. But I think the referee, Michael Oliver, had a decent position. It's just two players on a pitch where I think it's an accidental coming together. The second one, it's a good tackle from Declan Rice. There's the accidental contact. Not every little bit of contact means it's a foul. I think it's just a natural reaction of Trossard. He doesn't alter his stride. So he doesn't really make an attempt to foul Kulusevski. The referee took instructions. The Declan Rice on the sort of second phase of that, I thought that was a legal tackle. It was controversy at the time, but I think that everyone that watches that realises I don't think that was a foul either.
Ali, I know you say that he should have made more of it, Kulusevski, but do we really need to depend on the player to go down for it to be the case?
Well, forever and ever, Kay, since I've been doing this job, I've sat here against people, I wouldn't say against, but alongside people who may be a little bit old school when it comes to this stuff. Say, for example, Stevie. And when I say go down, draw a foul, they feel like, oh my God, the game is gone. Where's the spirit of the game? Where is fair play? Let me tell you, if you're an attacking player and you feel like you've been impeded, you feel like now you're off balance because of this coming together that Don is talking about and then the way that he's describing it, why fight it? You're not gonna get rewarded. There's no incentive to stay up. There is no incentive to stay up because more times than not, the referee is not gonna give you the foul if you take one, two, three steps and then go down. My message all along has been, if you feel contact, go down and have the referee do his job. Now, some people say that's living in the fringes of legality of the game. I'm saying you've taken my advantage by touching me. You've taken whatever advantage I've created, you've taken it away. Now you're impeding my progress. And so therefore, why would I fight through it? What is the incentive if the referee is not going to give me a foul and it's not going to reward me if I take one, two, three additional steps? So if I'm an attacking player, I feel contact, I'll go down. If Shaka touches me right now, I'll go down. That's just how it works.
Go on, Don.
Ali, I wonder. Sorry, Kay. I wonder, Ali, the reason why Kulusevski didn't hit the floor, because he knew it wasn't a penalty. So he tried to stay on his feet to try and provide a ball to James Maddison on the edge of the box. That's why he probably fought it, because in the back of his mind, he thought, that's not a penalty.
I like to give Kulusevski that sort of credit in the middle of the game. No. I don't think that's the case at all. He gets touched and doesn't quite know how to react to it and tries to fight through it. And he's like, well, I'm going to make the most out of this play. My message to him is, attend the diving camp with me this summer, and I'll tell you, Dalen Kulusevski, go down. You get touched, go down. Because now Michael Oliver has to make a decision. Now there's a decision to be made. And if he had given this as a penalty, this doesn't get overturned. And guess what happens? There's no Bukayo Saka goal. There's no 2-0 lead for Arsenal. It's a potential 1-1 situation. It changes the outlook of the game.
Was it a penalty?
Yes, it was a penalty.
No.
Yes, it was a penalty. Again, I fight against this all the time. And I can feel a really the tension coming from Shaka over here. I can feel it. I can sense it. Look, is he impeded? Even if it is by accident. Even if there's no intent, he was in an advantageous position. Was he impeded by the touch by Leandro Trossard? And if the answer to that is yes, then you have to consider the possibility that this is indeed a penalty. He was impeded. He lost his balance because of that touch. He was in a good running position. Once there was a touch, he loses his balance. Now it's a situation where he's struggling. And now it creates this sort of gray area in which do you go down, do you not? There is no gray area, Dejan. Go down. Go down and force Michael Oliver to make a decision.
One says yes, one says no. What do you say?
That wasn't a penalty. That wasn't a penalty. Though, to Ali's point, had it been given, I don't think it gets overturned. And I think you can quite easily make an argument, if it were given, as to why it should be a penalty. But my thinking is this, is Kulusevski plays the ball, I think it's into Heung-Min Son, and he's running side by side with Trossard, maybe just a little bit advanced of him. And the ball back from Son isn't a great one. It's back towards the top of the box. And so Kulusevski, not in possession, cuts across the front of Trossard and in my mind, it's Kulusevski who initiates the contact because he's cutting across Trossard, because the ball isn't a great one.
Oh, my goodness.
Now where are you putting that negative energy coming from?
Don't worry, Ali.
Because an attacking player cuts across a defending player, now he's into the defender.
He's not in possession of the ball. Neither of them. If he's in possession of the ball, say two players are running towards goal, and the striker cuts across the front of the defender. We always say that it's the defender's responsibility to avoid that contact. But he's not in possession.
What do you mean? He's dribbling into the box.
No, he's not. He plays the ball into Son.
Right,
he's and now the ball is a good one.
Yeah, but he's going towards the ball.
No, but the ball is being. Oh, it's not Son. No, the ball isn't back to him. The ball is back towards the top of the box, and that's why he cuts across the front of Trossard.
Never a foul.
That's for me. No, that's not a foul.
Right, but what did you say? That if he had been given as a foul, then he would.
If it's given, I don't think it gets overturned.
Okay, now here's my point. Right. If only we had a system in place that could allow the referee to take a good look at it, just a second look, and he can hang on to whatever his interpretation and whatever his initial call was. But I think it was important enough in the game to at least allow the referee to take a second look at it.
You don't have to call the referee for a second look at everything. That's not penalty.
All right, hang on, Don. Let's get off this subject.
It's never a foul.
You guys are not going to agree on it, and you're going to back him up. What else stood out to you, Don, from this game? What do you want to talk about?
I thought the quality of Bukayo Saka. I thought he was immense. A young boy that's took a lot of bad tackles, and he's even said it. He now treats it as a compliment. I thought he was magnificent. There's a few scars on those young knees, and there'll be a fair few more because he's brave. He takes the ball in difficult areas. I just think from a Tottenham point of view, Kay, I think they're starting to become a little bit predictable and a little bit naive. They're trying to copy someone else's style. They're trying to copy Guardiola with the inverted fullbacks. If you're Ben Davis coming into the game today and you're playing in a back four and you know Pedro Porro is going to be the most advanced fullback, stay in your position. You're up against Bukayo Saka. Why on earth would you just wander into inverted positions to try and create overloads and you're going to leave Bukayo Saka free? You know, if Pedro Porro does it from the right-hand side, all you're doing with Romero and Van de Ven and Davis then is just shuffling across to make a three. It's almost like they're getting sucked into this off-the-cuff football. And when it works, it looks good. When it doesn't, they get battered. James Maddison never got a kick and he can't last 90 minutes. He keeps getting taken off from Postecoglou. So I guess, and I get the sense that if you're James Maddison and one or two others, you're starting to get a little bit frustrated at the tactics.
Okay, Jan Agafjordtoft is not on the show tonight, so I will take his role and start the conversation on how awesome Kai Havertz is. Obviously, that long ball for Bukayo Saka. Then we saw his goal, the 3-0 in the 38th minute. And by the way, that's 12 goals and 6 assists in the Premier League this season. Anyone care to back me on this?
You can call Jan.
Yeah, I was wondering. Sure, Jan would be more than willing. Listen, I get the point. Kai Havertz has been a whole lot better than anybody expected him to be. So give either Kai or Arteta or both credit for that. But I still think that in the biggest occasions, in the moments when he's needed most, I'm not sure that he's the player you rely on. And I was talking to Stevie a couple of days ago and about when I went to the Emirates to see that Arsenal-Villa game. There was a moment in the first half where Kai Havertz gets played clean through. The flag eventually went up after the play had finished. But he gets played clean through. I'm sitting among Arsenal fans at the far end, so we can't see if he's offside. As far as we know, he's clean through. Linesman keeps his flag down. Not a single Arsenal fan moves. He goes through on Emi Martinez, who makes a save, and everybody around me just goes, yep, there we go. That's Kai Havertz. And that kind of spoke to some of the disappointments around Kai Havertz. And that's coming from Arsenal fans around me.
Against Villa. But then in the derby, he does what he did today. What are the Arsenal fans saying about that?
Well, they understand that when you need a third goal, he's the man. Went to make it 3-0.
A winning goal in the end.
Well, in the end. But that's more to do with Arsenal's feelings defensively. But when you need a cherry on top of your cake that's already been iced, somehow Kai Havertz is the man. That's my point. When we start to rely on Kai Havertz in big moments, then I will sing from Yan Sim Song Su.
Okay, well, you shouldn't do that, period.
Well,
okay. Yeah. In any case, as it pertains to Arsenal, I'm not going to focus on Kai Havertz. I'll just focus on the fact that today, in the first half, not necessarily in the second half, but in the first half, there was a certain maturity to their performance. Well, there was a lot of emotion from Spurs, and here we go, and they're trying to press you higher up the field. I saw an Arsenal team that sometimes absorbed some of that pressure, that were deeper in their defensive posture, and then in where there are moments in which they could press higher, they realized that they could do that, and then they were mature enough and brave enough to go ahead and do that as well away from home. The understanding of when to sit, when to go press, really good understanding from what Arsenal wanted to do defensively in the first half. The set pieces continue to be a big, big part of what they do offensively. They create chaos with the quality of their service. They scored a goal. Kai Havertz does that as well with good service, good header. All of those things are great for Arsenal. I don't understand why you have to go into the second half, be in control of a game, and get yourself into a stressful situation. And that's the part that I think they're going to look at and say, okay, this we got to cut out. Because while you get away with it now, you don't want it to show up at the worst time possible. And now every single game becomes critical. Every single game you have to be perfect. You have to continue to keep the pressure on Manchester City. In order to do that, you have to cut out some of this mistake. But the first 45 minutes were impressive with the level of maturity of Arsenal and the way they approached the game.
It was a landmark win as well today for Mikel Arteta as Arsenal manager. The fewest matches to reach 100 league wins among Arsenal managers, ahead of Arsene Wenger with 179. He's done it in 169 games.
And Van de Ven is really quick, by the way. Yeah. Man, he can run. That's all I say. Side note.
You and Craig always agree. Manchester City got a 2-0 win over Nottingham Forest in a game that didn't feature Phil Foden, who sat out due to illness. Manchester City's goals coming from Gvardiol and Haaland off the bench. But Forest did have some big chances in this game from Chris Wood, either side in each half, and also from Murillo just before the first half came to a close. This is how things are looking in the table. Manchester City stay second, 1 point, but one game behind Arsenal. And so it's another win for City, Don. They're doing what they need to do.
They're doing exactly that, Kay. It's the Man City that you watch every single season. At the business end of the season, they never panic. They churn out the results. I think that's them unbeaten in 19 in the Premier League. It's what they do. They got a little bit of fortune today. The context of the two goals, Nico Williams was marking Vardy all throughout the game and he was off the pitch. So Forrest were down to 10 men and he was obviously off the pitch when Vardy all scored. And then Murillo at the end of the game was struggling with his groin and he was sort of labouring. He was labouring towards the end of the game, and then Haaland come on and sort of took him on. He couldn't really shift his feet, but a very professional performance. All City fans want to do, like Arsenal fans at this stage of the season. Performances are good, but it's all about the wins.
It is all about the wins, isn't it?
Well, today in particular for Manchester City, yes, it has to be about the win and not so much about the performance as a whole. Because let me just say, there were moments in this game in which Manchester City were hanging on. And if Chris Wood had had a decent day, and I'm not even talking about a great day, but a decent day, he would have scored a couple of goals. And he's not the only one. Nico Williams, and Don just mentioned, not even a minute into the game, there's a ball floated to the back post and he is wide open and it's a swing and a miss. And there were moments like that for Nottingham Forest in which you think, man, if this team were any good, anywhere near a productive team in the attack, there were opportunities created. There were chances created. The moments were there. But you allow Manchester City to get away with those moments, and eventually the quality takes over. And so the possession of the ball from Manchester City in the second half, I'm going to say about 15, 20 minutes into the second half, was much better. The control of the game was much better. And eventually the quality of a guy like Erling Haaland, who scores a goal that we don't see him score all the time, in which he actually has to take somebody on, shift a little bit away from the inside to the outside and finish in the manner in which he did. It's good to see him score a goal again. I'm just saying, Manchester City, they'll be happy with the 3 points. I'm not so sure that the 90 minutes they'll be proud of.
And we got to see more service from Kevin De Bruyne once again, asking Erling Haaland, how may I serve you? Look at this. Most assists this season in the Premier League, 15 in 21 games. He is standing high above the other players on this one, assisting 2 goals in this game. Massive difference maker always, and no Foden today. Kevin De Bruyne is stepping off.
Yeah, we're with Foden. Apparently he's over with illness. And Kevin De Bruyne, we know exactly how good Kevin De Bruyne is as a player. Maybe he hasn't lived up to those heady heights this season. But once he's able to find spaces in those spaces, in those half spaces, as we saw against Forest, there are still very few passes of the ball as good and as effective as Kevin De Bruyne. I have to say, though, I'm with Ali and on this and on Manchester City. And while, yes, this is when City are normally so good, this is the time of the season where they just seem to find another gear, where they handle the pressure better than anybody else. And Don mentioned the run that they're on. It's 15 wins and four draws in the last 19. Nothing about that performance, nothing about what we've seen from City for some time suggests that this is a team that's undefeated in 19. How Nottingham Forest would be at home now wondering, how did we not at least get a point out of this? Because they had chances after chance. And it really felt like this was a moment coming, and maybe it was just Nottingham Forest as a team getting caught in the headlights. It was not about the performance of City. It was just about them kind of getting in their own hands and being intimidated by who the opponent was, as opposed to how well the opponent was playing. But all that being said, all you have to do, as we said with Arsenal, at this point, just keep somehow grinding out results. City are doing that and as needed.
Is there any suggestion, though, from what you guys have been saying, Don, that City don't win out?
No, I think both teams will win all their games. I think both teams are that good. I think if you're Arsenal, you're confident that you got the biggest test out of the way today. They'll win the next three games. And I think City will do exactly the same. I think when you look at Arsenal, as I said before, they've got Spurs out of the way, tough game. They'll beat Bournemouth. They'll beat Man United, who I commentated on the weekend against Burnley. And Burnley should have won the game by 3 or 4. And then last day of the season, they'll beat Everton at home. Everton are obviously safe now in the Premier League. And when you look at City's fixtures, Tottenham one's probably the most stressful one. But I just think we'll find a way to beat them. They'll win all four, and I think they'll win the league.
Any concerns for you there, Shaka?
My concerns are around City. Listen, I think Arsenal win out. They are just playing that good football, and we'll put the Villa game down as an anomaly. But for City...
Is that because you were at the stadium?
Well, I don't want to add to that. I don't want to add to that speculation. But for City, and again, while... Absolutely, yes. You can see City winning all four of those games. If City play like this, as they did against Forest, against Spurs as an example, I don't think they win that game. If they play like this, as they did against Forest, against Wolves, I don't think they win it. And that's the thing for me. If City show up, they win those games easily. If they produce these kind of performances that we saw today, I'm not sure that they get the better of Spurs, Wolves, maybe even West Ham.
LA?
Yeah, I had some concern about Arsenal coming into this match against Spurs, but obviously those concerns were put away. And so now I look at Arsenal and think, very much like Don, that they're going to win out. And so then the responsibility is on Manchester City. History tells us that we should trust Manchester City. I don't trust the team that I saw today.
Don, we're just pulling a face then. At who, Don?
Shaka saying he doesn't fancy Man City to beat what, Wolves and West Ham?
No, I said if City play as they did today against Forest, they don't win those games. And that's
but Phil
the thing.
Foden to come back in.
And I accept, all, as I said off the top, you absolutely see City winning out. But the inconsistency of their performances is the cause for concern. I don't have that cause for concern with Arsenal. Arsenal have been fairly consistent, Villa game aside. City just haven't. We know they can. This is when they're at their best, or they have to be at their best for the next four.
Don?
Yeah, no, I think they will raise the level. I think the reason why they are consistent, unbeaten at 19, is because of what they do. They're not the Man City of 3 or 4 years ago when we used to see them wallop teams by 6 and 7. They're a different machine now. But they're well capable, even though it's a slight contradiction, they're not really doing clean sheets. But I never really get the feeling that I'm stressed when I watch Man City. When you watch Liverpool the last couple of weeks, you think, oh, this is going to be hard. They're not really firing. It's a bit stressful because they're not particularly great and they're a little bit edgy. I never get that feeling when I watch Man City towards the end of the season. They've been there. They get the job done. Yes, they've lost people like Gundogan and Mahrez, but they've got Phil Foden, they've got Kevin De Bruyne, they've got Haaland, they've got Julian Alvarez, they've got Grealish, they've got Doku. They've still got an amazing players to I mean, Haaland came off the bench today. Phil Foden wasn't even in the squad through illness. So they're only going to get stronger. And I just think they've got, I think they've got in everyone's heads, if we're constantly talking about it as analysts, that they get the job done and you can rely on them. Can you imagine being in the Arsenal camp or the Liverpool camp when you're trying to chase them down? They're in everyone's heads for a reason, because they're that good.
All right.
Manchester City were, fans were stressed today.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I know Don is not stressed. I'm pretty sure Manchester City fans were stressed today.
I will also add that one of the reasons for hope for me with City, that's kind of a loose term, but it's Pep Guardiola and his understanding and reading of the game and situations in this. In his post-game press conference, he spoke about the City ground being a little bit dry, and he felt that affected how City were able to play, and why he went for the change at halftime and bringing off Doku because he felt the game was too open. Just little things like that, I think, is where Pep Guardiola sets himself apart. Recognizing what's needed, recognizing how the game needs to change and how conditions affect how ideally you want to play. That, for me, hearing Pep Guardiola speak about it gives me more reason to believe that City will be better in the closing games than they were today, than anything I saw from individual players in the park.
One thing that is a guarantee is that there will be a percentage chance question coming
tonight.
Extra Time, which is when Don Hutchison will be back with us. Make sure to check out Extra Time every single day over on our YouTube channel. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We heard from Nico Williams and his brother Iñaki after Nico was subjected to racist chanting at the Metropolitano on Saturday. Iñaki actually talked about how far-reaching these consequences are and how they go beyond the abuse to just the player. Sid Lowe joining us now to talk about what the reaction has been today in Spain.
Well, I think the reaction, the initial reaction, of course, is a frustration and sadness and anger that here we are again, this is happening again, a sense that somehow we don't it just keeps on coming back, and there needs to be something done. If you look in terms of the way the game was managed, and I'm sure some of our viewers will know this, but just in case for those that don't, the protocol that was done at the weekend is the protocol that is in place, the anti-racism protocol in the Federation, run by the referees, which is that you stop the game the first time, you make an announcement over the loudspeaker, and if it happens again, at that point, the referee takes the team off the pitch. Now, obviously, it's not always going to play out that way. We saw a case about 3 weeks ago when a goalkeeper, Rai Makaonda, was racially abused, and the team walked off. But because the protocol is what it is, that team, Rai Makaonda, lost the game 3-0. The goalkeeper got a two-game ban because he'd been sent off in arguing with the referee, because the referee wasn't aware of what was going on, and he was arguing with him. And they said, if this is what we have to do, this is what we have to do. We'll lose another game, and another game, and another game if we have to, because this needs to change. And I think there may well now be a desire to look at that protocol and think, should we shift this? Should we change this? Because at the moment, of course, because the mechanics in place are what they are, they don't allow, if you like, for clubs or for players to kind of take their own action. And so that means that in situations like the one that Rai Makaonda had, that they walked off the pitch, you would forfeit the game. I also thought it was very interesting listening to Iñaki Williams make a really important point, which I think is sometimes overlooked. This isn't just about the footballers who are being abused. It's about what it means for everybody. It's about what it means for other black athletes and other black people in society. And it's not just about them. And as Iñaki says, we've got to a point where we can deal with this, but it's not just about us. And then the final point, I suppose, is to show that this, again, punches a hole in that argument of some of those people who tried to justify some of the racist of abuse of Vinicius by saying it's because he's provocative. It is not an acceptable excuse.
Of course not. And as Sid said, here we go again.
And here we go again. And we're constantly having these conversations around Spanish football, around what can be done, what they're doing, what should be done. And while those protocols are in place, and I have absolutely no problems with the protocols, those protocols have to continue to evolve as these issues keep happening, as fans find ways around them or hide behind the legal system or the bureaucracy of it all. So I'm pleasured to see that protocols, that the referee stopped the game, that the announcement was made. I'm happy to see Nico Williams can have the response and the very measured post-game interview that he did. But it speaks to a larger responsibility of the league around protecting, and Sid is absolutely right, not just black players on the park, but what it means for black fans in the stadiums, what it means for black people in your societies, in your communities, and how they continue to be impacted by this racist behavior. I still feel that this is a symptom of some of the softly approach that we saw from the league and the Spanish courts in seasons gone by. It has become, it became a global issue, the issue in Spanish football. It became a global talking point. And I am happy to see that Spanish football are taking their responsibilities more seriously. Now I would like to see the larger fan base also take their responsibilities just as seriously. The day of the silent majority has been long, long gone. So it's no longer good enough to say, well, it was the guy over there, it wasn't me. Unless you're speaking up about it, unless you're assisting in any investigations that are to come, you're still a part of the problem if you aren't making yourself a part of the solution.
Yes, Sid, everybody has a part to play here to make sure that this stops.
Yeah, and as Shaq was saying about the if you like, the evolution, the increasing desire and willingness to take measures, I think one of the things, and I say this as someone who's lived in Spain for over 20 years now, you are seeing a shift in the way that this is dealt with. You are seeing an awareness that possibly wasn't there before, a recognition of how to, or at least how to try to tackle this, even if you're not always going to succeed. And I think one of the important things that we've seen in some of these cases is, and this genuinely wasn't the case 10 or 15 years ago. So, for example, Atletico Madrid, if they can identify the fans that did this, and they're already be saying today that they've identified at least one of them, that fan will be banned. That fan will end up in front of a judge. There will be action, and that is really, really important. And as Shaq says, that's not always been the case. Of course, we saw the case before a Madrid derby in which the local court said, well, we can't identify these people outside the stadium. There are too many of them. And in the context, they even said, in the context of a rivalry, a footballing rivalry. That's no context to justify racist abuse. Oh, it's okay because it's in the context of a tough and aggressive and an important derby. And I think those kind of things are being challenged now. And I also think it's probably worth making a point here. And a lot of this, or some of this at least, has been done by Vinicius himself, by standing up, by forcing people to approach this, by forcing people to kind of be confronted by it and to deal with it. And Vinicius has forced that through. That hasn't happened because the footballing authorities have thought, we should do something, and they've just kind of done it off their own back. No, it's happened because Vinicius has forced it through. Remember the response of La Liga to the first round of abuse that Vinicius got. It was Vinicius who's forced them onto the back foot and forced them to say, right, okay, we need to do something about this. And I think in that sense, that part of it, I think we really do need to give Vinicius enormous credit for the bravery and the willingness to stand up for himself, yes, but on behalf of loads of other black athletes and black people across Spain. And I think that's really important. I think at times we've lost sight of that.
Yeah, obviously great to hear the players speaking out about this and making sure that they will not stand for it. And we hope to see more change happening here. Sid, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us. I'll speak to you again soon.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's all we've got time for on the main edition of the show, but Don Hutchison will be back with us. Ali and Shaka are sticking around because we've got some questions for you here.
Yay!
We're going to answer them in extra time. Yay! Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Ali and Shaka here.
Are you ready for this?
What?
Ready for extra time, Kay? You're ready. Well. Are you ready for this?
Let me get my head down.
Are you sitting on the edge of a seat?
Got the giggles.
just making sure Kay is ready for
She's
once
got the giggles.
Coming.
Too many inside jokes here.
And I fixed my hair.
All right, done. Oh, Jan Agafyortoft, he does get involved in the show after all.
Jan just showing up.
Oh, gosh. This. It is Jan Agafyortoft.
That is Jan. Okay.
Is City better without Haaland? Is a game people like to play here at X? And when they have nothing else to discuss in the studio. Did City win the Champions League without Erling? Did City win the treble without Erling? Does the best manager in the world like to play without Erling? That's the questions.
Actually, those are the questions, but that's all right.
All right.
Just saying, if you're gonna, if you're gonna be petty about it, then I can be petty too.
Is he right though?
I don't think we sit here and say Manchester City are better off without Erling Haaland.
That was a subtweet to you guys.
Yeah, that was. I wasn't taking that personally at all.
What I would say is that I think Manchester City could use Erling Haaland better than they do. That sometimes he goes long periods of the game being ignored by his team and not using his skill set. I've asked this team to play through balls, over the top balls to Erling Haaland, and they refuse to do that. They rather play this sideways and backwards sort of stuff that at times can make Manchester City slow and predictable, and that's when they get in trouble. That's all. That's all.
You often do a little dance when you do the sideways and backwards.
Are you requesting a dance?
We've seen a few of them today off air.
Don't get lost in the shuffle.
I'm
never going to unsee that.
Just missing the dive. That's all you're missing there.
Hey, I'm just saying, Don, don't get lost in the shuffle.
Don't get lost in the shuffle, Don. We could have done with a Jan Agafyortoft tweet on Havertz.
Right.
Yep. Oh, that'll come. That'll be coming.
Right, that'll be
and if we're going to take... He's sitting in his hotel room, bored. That's what's happened there.
In front of the dog.
In his hotel room. Yeah, lights are off. He's bored. He's got his own brain, his own head. I detect a lot of sarcasm there from Jan.
Yeah. And if you're going to send in questions... and they're going to be picked for extra time. Please, next time, Jan, Hashtag FC Extra Time. Yeah. Everybody's doing it.
Jan, come on, get with it. All right. Xhaka, was Raya's confidence saved by Arsenal having gotten perhaps more goals in the first half than deserved? He seems to shake the mistake off pretty well.
Yeah, listen, you shake the mistake off. That's kind of part and parcel. You know, mistakes are part of this game. You win. And the only thing that mattered is that you won. And I will say, Arteta does an incredible job in terms of defending Raya and allowing him to play his natural game and make those mistakes. I would like to think you don't take that unnecessary chance if it's 1-0. That being said, even though I'm seeing it, I kind of doubt it. But I'd like to think that, okay, it's 3-0, you can take that chance, or whatever it may be. Listen, at this stage of the season, it's less about the mistake and any kind of long-term impacts, because the season's just about over. There's no long-term impacts.
And thanks to Kai Havertz, his third goal, everything was all right in the end.
Let me tell you.
Kai Havertz,
I think
agent
Kai's a little
here.
Bit smitten.
Yeah.
She's smitten by Kai Havertz.
Kai Havertz, agent.
Almost, you know, Kai's agent right here.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
Oh, making, hey, by the way, you're making some money if you're Kai Havertz's agent.
Oh, I would be. All right, Ferrale, especially if there was a goal bonus in there as well and the agent got a call.
If only somebody was responsible about putting a goal bonus in the contract.
No,
that
many.
Would be the agent.
Okay, Ferrale, do you think City should look to upgrade on their current wingers? Aside from Doku, no one really has the raw pace to beat their marker one-on-one, and the production from Grealish has been limited this season.
I'll tell you what's frustrating about Jack Grealish's game, and maybe because he has had some injuries, maybe because confidence is not quite there, but if you're a defender and you are and now you're in a 1v1 situation with Jack Grealish, you know exactly what's going to happen. He's not going to take you to the outside. So it's going to be touch, 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 cut back, inside. And if you're a defender and you've now taken away the possibility of this guy taking me to the outside, it becomes a whole lot easier to defend. So you start jumping the fact that he's going to cut back, and then he forces him not to just play it back, but further back than he intended. And now the attack has started all over for Manchester City. Now, I like the speed of Jeremy Doku. I don't like the final product of Jeremy Doku. And I think Guardiola has a conflict here with Jeremy Doku, because I think he appreciates the fact that he does give him a change of pace, but it doesn't quite match the rest of the game for Manchester City. I do think that Manchester City need change of pace in their attack. And that change of pace can be provided by Erling Haaland if you play him over the top, if you play him a through ball, if you play him a through ball, if you turn defenders backwards, if you turn defenders facing their own goal. I don't think Manchester City does enough of that.
Okay. For Don, told you it was coming. Percentage chance that Real Madrid win the Champions League. Is it over 50%?
Ooh, yes. I think it's just over.
Why so confident, Don?
Is there a number?
Well, who beats them? Who's going to beat a team that's won the Champions League a million times? It was only ever going to be Man City. I don't see who's got the quality. They're just... Are they getting people's heads? Because, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, Paris Saint-Germain had them beaten. I think Chelsea had them beaten. Man City had them beaten. And no one could get over the line. No one could get to 90-plus minutes beating them. All those teams had Real Madrid beaten at some stages in the same time when they won the Champions League. You just can't beat them.
Well,
if Man City can't beat them, who can?
50% then, if you're saying this?
Say again?
How is it only a little bit over 50% if you're saying all this?
Well, because there's a chance. I mean, I can remember, Kay, I remember sitting there, and it was quite funny, you talk percentages. I remember sitting there in the Man City game a couple of years back. I think it was the semi-final. I can't remember. I think it was. And there was a shot clock or a clock in the corner, and it had 90 minutes on the clock. And it was something like a 99% chance Man City would win the game. Because Real Madrid didn't have a shot on target. They scored 3 goals or something in injury time. It's what they can do to you, but someone's always got a chance. But I think they're massive. I'll go up to 60.
Right, we're
going 60.
What do you give the others then? What do you give?
Here we go.
PSG,
all right, now it gets difficult.
Bayern. Who's in it then? Who's in, Shaq? Bayern?
PSG, Bayern, Dortmund.
I think they'll play PSG in the final. I think PSG will get there.
Numbers.
Any percentages numbers. For those three?
Okay, it'll be 70-30 in Real Madrid's favour when they play PSG in the final.
What?
No.
What's the chances? Was the percent chance of yes. Dortmund winning the Champions League? What's the percent
Dortmund.
Chance of
Dortmund.
PSG winning the
All at the same time.
What's the percent chance of Bayern winning?
All right, I'll start with Dortmund. Zero.
Wow.
All right.
Well, okay. I'm trying to make this somehow easier for myself. So bear with me. It's not like I'm going to go Dortmund 7 and put myself in a world of trouble. Keep it simple here, Don. Keep it simple. Dortmund 0.
PSG?
50. No! Whoa. I didn't mean that. 30.
And there it is. He's back,
baby. Bayern 20. Real Madrid 50.
Oh, Bayern is. Oh, that means Bayern with.
No! Oh, no, God. Bayern 30. Bayern 30, PSG 20, Real Madrid 50.
It's done.
Your teacher too tonight, like him.
It started with over 50, and then it went to 60. Now it's back down to 50.
It's done.
I didn't realize you're going to bring four all teams into the equation.
Too many variables.
Okay. Too many numbers. Too tempting.
Too mean. Let me give you an easier one, Don. You talked about this yesterday, Ali. So let's get the guys' thoughts on this. Right. What do you make with what happened with Klopp and Salah?
I didn't really read too much into it. I tell you the scenario because I said to someone that today, everyone's wondering what was said between Klopp and Salah. And I'm pretty sure, because I've been there myself, when you've been dropped in a game, and I'm pretty sure Klopp would have went to him, Mo, are you ready? And then Mo's lost his mind and went, of course I'm ready. Then there would have been a few expletives. I've been ready for half an hour. I've been ready for 45 minutes. Why didn't you start me in the game? And then you're just looking at the end of it, two competitors who are highly stressed. There's every chance I think Mo might be moving on. I think he'll be moving to Saudi in the summer. So I think he's just lost his mind for a split second. Listen, this is a player that's not been playing well. He's a legend and will go down as one of Liverpool's all-time greats. And he is respected massively. But in the context of a couple of games, he was droppable because he wasn't playing well. So I just think it's a scenario where manager's stressed. He's took a chance, he's dropped him, he's forced him to try and come onto the pitch. He needs him, and then Salah's probably thinking in the back of his mind, ha, you need me now, and it's all just sort of kicked off. Nothing really too much to see.
I'm a Don on this. I don't think there's an awful lot to it. I think Mo Salah's reaction afterwards in the mixed zone kind of added fuel to that fire that he was mentioning. But I think that kind of exchange, a heated exchange between manager and player, happens a lot. But often it doesn't spill over. But even so, even in the mixed zone, you're still a little bit, you know, you're still, blood's still a bit boiling, you're still a bit, angry with the whole situation. So maybe that got the better of Mo Salah in the moment. But I think the true test as to exactly how grave it was is on the Sunday or the Monday or whatever day they next come together. But these type of things happen.
What makes your blood boil, Shaq? Hmm? Your blood. What makes your blood
boil? Good question. Food.
Hashtag FC Extra Time.
I don't know.
Food.
I've kind of learned to accept all the nonsense that comes with
life.
Life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What about a bad dinner, Shaq?
Dinner even keel.
What about a bad dinner?
Did either of you guys give the whole conversation how it might have gone that Don did yesterday? I don't think you did. I like the way that Don said, well, he probably said this.
Right.
And then he said that.
Well, no, because I was here with Dan and he already had a documentary ready as to the background and backdrop of this information. So I've already heard all the possibilities as to why this is something that has been ongoing and it just blew up yesterday. That's Dan's theory anyways.
All right. Don, what are the odds of Liverpool finishing top four next season?
Next season? Wow. I mean, I'll have to try and get me crystal ball. Strong odds. I've spoke to a couple of commentators that have worked on Dutch football. They really like Arne Slot. They think he's a very good people person. He's got charisma. Different to Ten Hag. He's not a Ten Hag just because you're coming from the same league. The trouble, I think, what Slot's got to do is obviously following Jurgen Klopp. But I think in the immediate, he's got to have the conversation with Virgil van Dijk and make sure he keeps him on board. And he keeps him because he's the rock of the football club. He's the captain. He's got the eyes and the ears of the dressing room. I think it's inevitable that Liverpool will sell Mo Salah for a big fee and then try and reinvest in the squad. He's still being left, Arne Slot, with a really, really healthy squad, you know. Even if they lose Mo Salah, it's still really healthy.
Okay, Shaka. Manchester United haven't played as a dominant team in the last 10 years.
But they've been fantastic to watch, though.
Yeah, entertaining. Dynamic. Dynamic.
They've been really
dynamic. Yeah, that, very dynamic. Mm-hmm.
Why are you so sure that the manager is the problem?
I think the problems are far more deep-rooted than the manager. He's the easiest fix. You can't. The Glazers aren't going anywhere. I think that's the biggest problem. But they're not going anywhere. Let's be honest. So let's kind of speculate about that. And you can't change a squad. You can't change an entire squad all at once. So inevitably, when things aren't going well, the manager is the first and easiest solution.
Don, did you see Juan Mata giving Ale some stick this week on the show?
No, I've not seen it. But just on the Erik ten Hag one, you know, I mean, we all think the job's a little bit too big for him. And sometimes he's a little bit deluded by saying, you know, we're one of the best teams in the Premier League, or the entertainers to try and watch. I've heard rumours that Ineos and Brailsford, I think they'll be thinking, let's not rush into a managerial position. This is what I'm hearing from journalists. It's nothing golden. It's just a little bit gossip. But they might be thinking, well, because the problems are so deep-rooted at Man United, do we try and go for a quick fix in a year where there's not great managers out there? Or do they leave Ten Hag in position for one more year to then potentially find out, actually, what do we do going forward in the long run for a longer period of time? So he might be given one more year just to see what he can do and try and be a little bit of an interim for the next man that takes over. Just a thought.
We should bring Juan Mata back on the show and ask him.
What
some
did he say?
Ask him some positive questions.
Nice positive things about
Don Ali made Juan's blood boil.
Oh,
that's what he did.
With very positive
dive.
A very positive
question.
I just asked a couple of questions.
Come along, all happy. Well, to talk preseason. Oh, look, we're coming to the US for preseason.
Have you been
a happy time. In steps Ali.
Hey, he had a smile when we were talking.
Ah, goodness me. Poor Juan.
Again, we should bring him back and ask him very positive questions about the dynamic team of Manchester United. Entertainment.
Well, you will be meeting him this summer, no doubt, for a catch-up, right? I'm sure that must be on the cards.
Of course. I thought we had great rapport.
I loved it. I want Juan Mata back on the show.
We need to have a camera there.
Oh,
yes.
I thought I would
just add that into Dan's documentary.
I thought it was a great exchange of ideas and thoughts. His were more positive than mine.
obligatory percentage question for Don, another one.
Here we go.
What percentage chance do you give Luton, Forest, and Burnley of staying up?
I'm going to go Forest 50%. Because they've got winnable fixtures. I think they've got Sheffield United and Burnley last day of the season. I'm going to give Luton a 30% chance, and I'm going to give Burnley, even though they are the form side down there, a 20% chance because their fixtures are awful. They're very, very difficult. So 50, 30, 20.
Somebody has done that before. Don didn't come up with them percentages seamlessly.
No, just now.
So quickly, and he just, you know.
Shall I let you into a secret?
Yeah, you had notes.
I preempted that question. On my little bit of paper in front of me,
I knew it.
50, 30,
I knew it.
20.
Far too easy. Yes. He just reeled it off. Yeah. No backtracking.
Well.
No.
I had one more. I had a 46-54 for the title race just up my sleeve, Kay. Just in case you needed me.
Let's not run before we can walk.
Are you saying, Shaq, that he took too much ownership on the answer?
It was
like, they would do this and they're going to do that. And then,
I'm in the fixtures.
Can you see it?
Yeah, Burnley are the form team. They've got
30,
more
20.
Difficult fixtures. So they go, I knew it.
And a 46-54.
Okay. So now Don needs a cheat sheet before he comes to the show, right?
You see?
Can I just say, so little faith from the mayor of Newcastle in this Geordie lad.
But hold on. Justified.
Yes.
My faith was justified.
Justified 10 minutes ago.
By Don.
Shaq, what makes your blood boil? I'm guessing it's food. Food related, a bad meal.
No, Dom. No.
That'll get you going.
Shepherd's pie. Benedict or sushi.
No, I'm you know.
Yeah, that's something I can take anything.
Yeah, you could put corn in my shepherd's pie any day. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that at all. Just throw whatever you want in there.
We know Shaq would just look out on the horizon.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be so much worse.
Oh. Speaking of which, Shaka, other than Trinidad, what's the best vacation spot in the Caribbean?
Best vacation spot in the Caribbean? Barbados. Barbados is gorgeous.
When are you next going there?
Hey, stop reminiscing.
I haven't been to Barbados for a long time. I'm going to Grenada soon.
Oh, so, again?
No, I haven't been to Grenada for a long time.
I mean, again, you're leaving?
Get on a vacation.
No, it's business.
We're growing the game.
Advancing ESPN FC. That's what I'm doing.
Spreading the gospel of the game.
All the corners of the footballing world.
Can I throw a little place in? I went for about 6 years on the spin.
Sure.
And I went to a place called St. Vincent's.
Oh
my days, what a place.
I've been to St. Vincent.
Oh, well, there's... Hey,
what
there
a
you
place.
Go. There's another vacation, Shaq.
St. Lucia, that was nice. Anguilla was nice. But, easy...
Barbados
is great. Oh. Barbados really is.
And Don, are you coming here?
I wonder if anybody has any Masters games coming up in Barbados or anything. Huh? I'm just putting it out there.
Any friendlies?
You okay?
Yeah, I'm just putting it out there. If anybody has any games they need a retired goalkeeper for.
Who's not willing to dive either.
I'm willing to advance the game. I'll come to advance ESPN FC.
We've got one more tweet coming and I don't know what this one is. So.
Okay. Sunglasses.
So many questions, little time.
Pink shirt.
My word.
Who's looking into my soul?
Oh my goodness.
Who's looking into my soul?
Wow.
That suit does not fit Dan. The suit does not fit Dan.
I was not ready for that.
He doesn't take a good picture,
does he? I was only 10.
He doesn't take a good picture.
Oh, Jesus.
Dan shared that today, not me. But yeah, 16 years ago today.
You're shorter than Dan.
Hang on a minute. Can we bring that back up?
That kind of looks like you're shorter than him, you know?
No. So heels on as well.
Dan's little
heels on.
Do we have any proof that I have
Dan's little on? Dan's little puff of hair there. Dan's little puff of hair there might be, you know?
He's
standing on the front seat.
Does the hair tuft make all the difference?
He's standing on the front seat.
It's so much hair gel there.
So I've heard. I've heard that little tuft of hair is telling. It sways many an opinion.
Right. Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago.
Well, it's seared into my memory now.
Yes, thanks very much, Dan.
Looking into my soul.
We'll be back tomorrow.